Hello, it's Friday, June 2nd, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. It's Friday, we're looking forward to the weekend, and what a heck of a week it's been. Before we bring our special guest on today, we have a couple things to touch upon. First of all, some sad news. Visigoth, one of our favorite radio show hosts, he does From the Grassy Knoll. We've been appearing on that show every Wednesday night. Well, we got some bad news yesterday, and Viz isn't going to be doing his show for a while. Lisa, fill everyone in.
Due to health issues with his wife, she's being, I think, admitted today into the hospital. So Viz needs to take time. The hospital's like 35 miles away, and Viz needs to be with her until this is resolved. So we do wish them both well and have them both in our prayers and thoughts.
Exactly. And the most important thing is for Lady Viz to get well. The second most important thing, then, is to get Viz back on the air because he's one of the good ones out there who does a great job. So,
and we'll let you know as soon as he does come back on.
Exactly. Also, we have an update on the Jeff Rentz ongoing saga. We got a message yesterday on our phone from an attorney.
Mr. Schmoor is Patsy Smullen's lawyer in Oregon. It is confirmed that Jeff Rentz has retained an attorney, and the attorney for Jeff Rentz has sent a letter of demand, I guess that's what they call it, to Patsy Smullen's attorney, and I was contacted. I haven't been able to speak with the lawyer yet because we missed each other, so we'll apprise you of any developments with that.
And we'll get back to everybody on our Monday Wing TV show about any further developments. Finally, an update on our show from Tuesday on the Haditha Mele massacre. What seems now that the Pentagon or the military is going to start giving all our troops sensitivity training over in Iraq, and they're going to do this so that, this is an exact quote, so that our values can be, that the values that separate us from our enemies are very well known.
Who are they going to have doing it, the Mossad?
The values that separate us from our enemies. And when I heard that this morning, I thought, well, how many Iraqis came into our country and slayed 24 innocent people in their houses? All I can say is screw this war propaganda, screw Donald Rumsfeld, screw the Zionists that are behind it, that are controlling this war.
And screw the moron that represents us, George Bush.
Exactly. So when I heard that, the values that separate us from our enemies, very, very, very intriguing. Now, as I said, our very special guest today is Mr. Mark Glenn. We're proud to announce that Wing TV and Sisyphus Press just released his third book. It's called Hear No Evil. Mark is also the author of Not My Words, But Theirs, and also the very highly touted No Beauty in the Beast, which is a must-read for everybody. And we're just so glad we've been looking forward to this interview for about 2.5 weeks. So we'd like to welcome Mr. Mark Glenn to Wing TV.
Hey, Mark.
How you doing, Mark?
Hey, how you guys?
Real, real good.
Mark's on top of a mountain right now.
The way all anybody that's got any sense these days should be, right?
Yeah. Now, Mark, before we get started here, let everybody know what your website is and how they can find your books.
Well, I guess the new one, people need to go to wingtv.net to find it, since my two good friends here are the ones who are offering it. But if you're interested in either of the other two, you can go to www.crescentandcross.com, and that's Crescent, C-R-E-S-C-E-N-T, crescentandcross.com.
Yeah, and that's also Mark's other writings and our other columnists there. And I wish everybody could see the front and back cover of this book. We're going to show it on Monday on the televised version of our show. Lisa did the front and back, and it's absolutely gorgeous. So, Mark, we got to jump right into this because we have a million questions. So the context of this book, your latest book, Hear No Evil, is in the context of the Alabama church burnings. And it seems that if Muslims would have done this, if the KKK, neo-Nazis, nationalists, if anybody would have did this, we'd still be hearing about it today. But it ends up that it was three Jewish teenagers that used some very nasty incendiary devices to set these churches on fire. Tell everybody how this idea popped into your head to use this as the context for your latest book.
Well, of course, anybody who's been following this knows that this incident was charged with all kinds of extremely serious and heavy implications. You have nine black churches in the Deep South being burned, nine Christian churches. Okay, the first thing that anybody would think of is, okay, 9 black churches? Well, it's the KKK. 9 Christian churches? Oh, well, I guess it must be the Muslims, since the Muslims supposedly hate the Christians so much. And then, as it turns out, the 3 culprits who are caught happen to have Jewish names, and all of a sudden we hear nothing more about it. Now, anybody who pays attention to the news and who pays attention to the trends that are going on knows that if these 3 kids, and I use that word in quotations, if these 3 guys had been, as you mentioned, white supremacists, or if they had been Muslims or anything like that, it probably would have bumped OJ off the front pages in terms of the amount of coverage that it would have gotten.
Exactly.
But particularly today, given the fact that we have the Jewish agenda trying to push this idea that the Muslims and the Christians are at war with each other. And so, all of a sudden, the thing just went cold, and we heard nothing about it anymore.
You're right.
And so I use this as a way of introducing the bigger theme, which is that we in the Christian world hear no evil when it comes to the mechanics of the Jewish agenda, and as it pertains to this particular event, in that we did not hear any evil with regards to the 3 individuals who were caught, there is a larger picture that we have to consider, which is the Jewish agenda in general. Okay, this one incident is just a drop in the bucket, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
compared to all the others.
I'm glad you said that, the Jewish agenda. In your book, you say the truth is a controlled substance. And you also say that there's truth that gets smiles and approving nods, and then there's truth that gets frowns and menacing glares. I'd like you to compare the freedom of speech that exists today in many parts of the world due to this Jewish agenda to the sort of freedom of speech that exists in all totalitarian systems.
Well, of course, you know that when it comes to the agenda, freedom of speech, as we said, it is a controlled substance. There is freedom of speech when it assists in the agenda, and then there's freedom of speech when it runs counter to it. We should not make any mistake by assuming that we live in a free speech society. We are free, just as people are in all totalitarian systems, we are free to say what assists the agenda. And if we step outside of those bounds, as Jesus, as John the Baptist, as the early Christian martyrs did, and as the Muslims today are doing, if you step outside the bounds of that, well, then you get hammered, and we know this. This is the way freedom of speech works. Really, you're only free to assist them in seeing the end result of their agenda realized.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mark, there's an ardent push these days by certain elements of the alternative media, especially on some sites like Jeff Rentz's, where they say that it's okay to criticize the neocons, it's okay to criticize the Zionists, but we can't go any further. We can't examine Judaism. We can't step over that line. And I want to ask you, is why should people be wary of such a tactic?
Well, because first of all, I'll be honest in saying that when I first got involved in this, I was one of those people who was slightly friendly to that idea, which is let's draw a line between Judaism and Zionism, okay? Because this is how we were raised. We in the Christian West were raised to believe that Jesus was a Jew and that Christianity came from Judaism and all the rest of that. As I started studying, though, particularly as I started reading the words of Jesus a little bit more carefully, what I came to see is that Christianity did not come from Judaism, that Jesus, in the strict sense, was not a Jew. He said you cannot pour new wine into old wineskins, and what he was saying was you cannot mix Christianity and Judaism together. They're two completely irreconcilable substances. Okay, now, having said that, as I began examining what Judaism really was, I said, well, there is no difference between Judaism and Zionism. One is religious and one is political. The difference between the two is like the difference between filtered and unfiltered cigarettes. Okay, they're both
uh-huh.
dangerous. They're both unhealthy. One is just a little bit less dangerous than the other. Now, these people who push this line that we have to build this this Berlin Wall between Judaism and Zionism, I think that for the most part they're either ill-informed or they're just plain scared. They know that there is a line that you cannot cross, and you know, when you begin approaching the beast, okay, when you begin the business of exposing the real nature of the beast, and in this case the beast is Judaism, okay? Jesus wasn't fighting Zionism 2,000 years ago, he was fighting Judaism,
mm-hmm.
okay? So when they begin exposing the nature of the beast, that is when the real heat comes down, and that's why I believe, for the most part, you see these people maintaining this strict separation between the two, when really it does not exist.
That's very, very well said.
This war of ideas that's been fought, as you say, on many fronts throughout history, extends farther back than 2,000 years ago, doesn't it? Can you tell everybody about that? When did it all begin?
Well, I mean, depending on how strict you are with your history, there will be people that say, well, it began when the Jews were dragged off to Babylon 600 years before Jesus came. But, you know, and lately, and I certainly don't want to raise the ire of too many people, maybe this is just too radical of an idea, but
it's too late.
But I think that it goes all the way back to the beginning, okay, all the way back to Moses and the whole exodus from Egypt. I think that there was a problem with these people. There was always a problem with the way that they thought.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't think that it began within the last 2,000 years or within the last 2,500 years, but rather that it goes back much further than that. Why was it that the Almighty felt that it was necessary to cast these Ten Commandments into stone instead of on paper, you know, on stone to where it couldn't be erased and it couldn't be tampered with, okay?
Yeah.
What was it that he saw about the collective character of these people that made him say to himself, if I write this down on paper, then some adventurous type might come along and erase it, scratch it out, and come up with some version of his own that would obviate what it is that I'm trying to accomplish here. And so we have to take, you know, and it's a hard thing for Christians to do this. We see ourselves as being this unbroken, having this unbroken connection with the people of the Old Testament. And, you know, we have to remember what Christ said. He said, all those who came before me were liars and assassins.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, what does that mean? Well, if you do a little bit of study into the Old Testament, you'll find that most of the priests, most of those who held some kind of either religious or political power within the Israelite community, they were corrupt. They were all corrupt. Everybody knows about David. Everybody knows about Saul. And so what I'm saying is that we have to keep an open mind about this and to say that this problem, it isn't something that sprang up in the last 50 years with the creation of Israel. It isn't something that sprung up within the last 2,000 years with Jesus and the Sanhedrin. It is something that I believe has gone all the way back to the beginning.
And I want to build upon that, Mark, that a lot of people, especially in the Christian world, they look at Judaism as just another one of the world's great religions, okay, that it's the building block of Christianity. Is this true?
No. Like I said, Jesus said you cannot pour new wine into old wineskins. He said if you pour my wine, my fresh, fruity, refreshing, life-giving wine, into the old wineskin of Judaism, then the wineskins are going to burst, and the wine will be spilt on the ground where it will be lost. He said, no man can serve two masters. Oh, you will either hate the one and love the other, or vice versa. He said, any man who puts his hand to the plow, but then who turns and looks behind him, is not fit for a service in the kingdom of God. And what I believe he was saying was, you cannot follow me and follow these men over here as well. It's either going to be me or it's going to be them. And so this idea that Christianity somehow sprang forth from Judaism, I think is just a complete farce. If you look at what happened in the days immediately following Jesus' death, where did Christianity find root? It didn't find root among the Jews. It found root among the Gentiles.
Mm-hmm.
Where did the early fathers of the Christian church go? They didn't remain in Judea. They fled westward into the land of the Gentiles. And so this idea that somehow there is this creature, this mythical half-wolf, half-lamb creature known as Judeo-Christianity, is farcical and it is heretical, in my opinion.
In this book, you've compared the two ideologies, Christianity and Judaism, to fire and water, to freedom and tyranny, and you describe some of the ways the Jewish agenda has been, at least allegorically, burning down the pillars of Christianity over, you know, through time, over the last century, using media, academia, and law. Can you explain to people the furor that erupted over Mel Gibson's The Passion from the Jewish leadership, also known as the modern-day Pharisees, compared to the Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown, which everybody just was going crazy over for a while until the Christians started firing up?
Yeah, that's a perfect example. Here we have, I mean, let's look back a few years ago to when Mel Gibson released this movie. You had Jewish leaders going out in public, issuing press statements, saying that Mel Gibson and everybody who was involved in making that movie should be arrested and tried as terrorists under provisions of the Patriot Act. He was having death threats made against him and against his family. Okay, now you have this individual coming out named Dan Brown alleging that Jesus had this sexual union with Mary Magdalene, a former prostitute, and all that it gets is a lot of fawning. Okay, and then, of course, the worst part of all of it is that the Christian world is stampeding like a herd of buffalo towards every movie theater they can find so that they can go and watch this. And then, of course, you listen to the discussions taking place. Well, maybe Jesus did have something to do with her. Maybe there is something to this. And let's not forget, too, within the last few months, we have this resurgence of this Gospel of Judas thing, which alleges that Jesus and Judas had this little agreement between each other that Judas was going to betray him. So the differences between how these two things is stark. And if there's anything that serves as proof that there is this thing known out there as the Jewish agenda and that it is absolutely inimical to Christianity, then we really don't have a better example of this than what has taken place lately.
You know, I'm going to paraphrase what Jesus said here, but he said, if they refuse to hear you when you leave, shake off the dust that is on your feet for a testimony against them. Isn't he saying, is he saying that the God's chosen people still have a covenant with him if they don't follow his way?
And let me add to that, you also say that when you look at Jesus' message, it's one of liberation. But when you look at the Pharisaical Judaism, it's one of enslavement and really never the twain shall meet.
I mean, Mark, considering the Jews' rejection of and subsequent deicide of their own God, would you agree that their covenant with God is broken?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that the Jews did not have a covenant with God. Remember that the Jews are members of one of 12 tribes, meaning the Judites. Okay, there were 12 tribes, 12 sons of Abraham. The Jews are just one of those tribes, okay? So we have to remember that it wasn't the Jews with whom God made this covenant, this supposed covenant. It was with all 12 tribes. This is one of the mistakes that we in the Christian world make today, is that we classify all of the people of the Old Covenant or the Old Testament as being the Jews. But there were 11 other tribes of people. And I think that this goes a long ways towards describing just what the tribe's agenda is. Judaism is about the tribe of Judah.
Uh-huh.
That's it. They look out for their own interests. And the fact that they have more or less hijacked and taken over this old covenant that was supposed to have existed with the other 11 tribes tells you a lot about the self-centered, self-interested mindset that this tribal way of thinking purports. Now, having said that, also what we have to keep in mind is that they, when they rejected Christ, when he came and said, I have come to liberate you from this way of thinking, this enslavement, this enslaving way of thinking that you have, and they rejected that, what they said is, we prefer tyranny to liberation. The tribe means more to us than anything that this higher being can offer us. And so they were the ones who shut themselves out, and the proof of this exists to this very day. This is why they cannot go anywhere without being driven out. It is because they carry forth the same way of thinking that has always caused them problems throughout their history.
All right. You're listening to Mr. Mark Glenn on Wing TV, the very brilliant Mark Glenn, we should add. He's the author of No Beauty in the Beast, Not My Words, But Theirs, and also the recently released, actually yesterday, Hear No Evil. And, Mark, What we're going to do right now is ask a question, and we want to let everybody know that the interviews we do here, they're not staged. We don't tip our guests off to questions beforehand. We want to do the interviews cold so that they're spontaneous. So this question comes from somebody who read your book before it was published, and he says that this question deals with love. So I'm going to read it how he wrote it. He says, in the book of Matthew, Jesus says to love your enemies, bless those who curse you, and do good to those who hate you. And that is the way that we're acting as true children of God. So he asks, how do you feel your book lives up to these teachings?
Okay, that's a good question. Now, I know you want a short answer to things, but
now take your time.
I am not known for my short answer.
Take your time.
Okay. Now, first of all, we have to keep in context that when Jesus is saying these things, turn the other cheek, love your enemy, blah, 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 all that, you have to remember who he is talking to at this time. He is talking to the Jews. He is talking to a group of people who don't turn their cheek over anything.
Right.
You know, I knew I have a friend who was raised a Jew and he became a Christian. And some of the things that he has told me about what his life as a Jew was like are unbelievable. And one of the things that he told me was this instance where he lusted after his best friend's wife, his best friend, okay? And he placed a curse on his best friend so that his best friend would die and so that he could get his best friend's wife, okay? Now, this is his best friend. Now, what I'm saying here is there is this mindset among, this Jewish mindset that they don't turn the other cheek over anything. It is a very brutal, it is a very vengeful, it's a very covetous mindset. And so when we read these things that Jesus is saying to them, we have to keep that in mind. What he's saying to them is, look, you know, if your neighbor does something that is a slight or an insult, big deal, let it go. It's not worth starting a war over. It's not worth placing a curse on him. Just let it go. It doesn't matter. And so, now, I'm not saying that we as Christians shouldn't take this same thing into our own lives, that we're supposed to love our enemies. But at the same time, we have to put this thing in its proper context. What he's saying to these Jews is, quit worrying about these little things. You know, if your neighbor strikes you on the cheek, meaning if he insults you or something like that, then fine. They're just words, sticks and stones. It doesn't matter. And so we have to keep that in mind because at the same time, you know, Christ was also very brutal in some of the other things that he said, you know, when he was talking about the children. And he says that anyone who would harm one of these children should have a stone tied around his neck and that he should be cast into the sea. Now, you know, what he's talking about there is taking violent action against evil people. So how do we reconcile these two seemingly irreconcilable ideas? And I think that the proper way to see this is the way that I just described, which is you have to remember who he was talking to at the time.
All right, very good.
Mark, the Eighth Commandment says, do not bear false witness against thy neighbor. And the general widely accepted definition of the word neighbor for mankind means all men, yet it doesn't seem to be the same definition used by the Jewish people, and it doesn't seem like the Eighth Commandment is even binding upon God's chosen people. What, considering how they treat the Palestinians, it doesn't seem that they would consider the Palestinians their neighbors. What is the Jewish definition of the word neighbor?
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring this up because probably Christ's most famous parable is the one of the Good Samaritan, because he was asked by one of the rabbis, he said, who is my neighbor? And so Christ gives him this parable where he talks about this man being beaten and left for dead. And then and then in the end, you know, the priest and the Levite, they see this man in his condition and they keep going about their business. And it's this Samaritan who is the one who winds up helping this man. Now, if you know anything about that time period, the Samaritans were the lowest class of people in Judaic society. Mm-hmm. Okay, they would be considered as blacks were considered in the deep south of America at one time, and certainly as the Palestinians are considered. used in referring to one of the other 11 tribes of the Israelites. So we have to keep this in mind, that when Christ is talking about neighbor, he is talking about all men in the general sense. But when Judaism is talking about neighbor, it is talking about a fellow member of the tribe, and that's it.
All right. Now, there's a history of some very horrendous Jewish atrocities, especially in our recent era. All we have to do is go back and look at World War I, World War II, and look at Jewish Bolshevism, where there's basically anywhere from 30 to 100 million Christians and Muslims killed in this war. In your book, you compare this, the acid of Judaism infused into the bloodstream of Christian society. Expand upon that.
Well, you know, actually, when we get down to it, the numbers are much higher, because when we consider how many children have been murdered in the womb, okay?
Yep.
In America alone, somewhere between 40 and 50 million, okay? And we're not even talking about the rest of the Christian West. And once again, when you go and you do a little bit of research and you find out, okay, who are the architects who brought this abomination known as infanticide, known as abortion, into Christian society, you find that the people who were involved in this, the same cast of characters, same designation as far as their religious sensibilities. And so when you take those numbers into account, you know, we never hear about these numbers. I mean, all we hear about are the supposed 6 million who perished in Hitler's camps.
Yeah.
We don't hear about the between 60 and 100 million people who perished in Bolshevik Russia. We don't hear about the hundreds of millions who have been killed for abortion. And these are only the physical deaths. Take into account the way that the Christian West, most of the members, and in particular the young people, the way that their hearts and their minds have been murdered. They are a people now who, for the most part, cannot distinguish between right and wrong. We as a people are, it's like we're a bunch of addicts. We have been born into a state of addiction, and we don't know any better. I mean, you know, think about 200 years ago, and the fact that in America we supposedly fought for our freedom over some issues involving taxes. You know, we remember the 8 men at Lexington Bridge who were killed by the British. But we kill 5,000 of our own American children a day in this country,
mm-hmm.
and nobody raises a cry over it. So, you know, we have to keep this, you know, we have to keep this into account, that there are so many unseen casualties to this thing. We haven't even begun to reap the results of this yet.
Mm-hmm.
You talk in your book about the Brotherhood. You say it's the most racist, most violent, most vicious, most vindictive, most influential of all. You say it constantly lectures us on tolerance, chides us for hate. It doesn't just settle for occasional house burnings, because it prefers more spectacular events like crashing airliners into buildings that lead to full-scale wars that accompany millions of deaths. And then we have Deborah Lipstadt saying the Jews are commanded by God to exterminate inferior races such as the Palestinians. Like, they don't even try to hide how they feel.
Well, they don't have to, do they? I mean,
I guess not.
The American people, they simply do not. I mean, you and I privately have talked about this many times. The problem is not that we have evil men in the world. We've always had evil men in the world, okay? The problem that we as a culture face, and I include all of the West in this, the problem that we face is that we have evil men in the world and nobody cares about it. That's the problem.
Let me ask you this, Mark.
If people cared enough to pull the weeds out of their garden, then we would be able to maintain something of a just system. So when you have the Brotherhood, and in this case, you know, when I'm writing about it in my book, I'm talking about, you know, we always hear about the Brotherhood of the South, meaning the Ku Klux Klan, and how vile they are, how racist they, the lynchings and the burnings. But those things are small in number compared to, you know, full-scale world wars. And yet we don't hear about the Brotherhood that's responsible for bringing these things into existence.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but the thing is this, we can't blame these evil men for this. We have to blame ourselves because we allow it to happen. The Christian world hears no evil. It will hear no evil about this thing known as the Jewish agenda. It's just like those three monkeys. They sit there with their hands clamped over their ears and over their eyes and over their mouths, and they think that somehow they are going to, that their number is not going to come up. And they sit by and allow all of these people, a billion Muslims, they sit by and allow them to be exterminated, and they do nothing about it. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned, Victor, at the beginning of the show about these massacres that took place over in Iraq. Okay, 24 people died. Well, there have been over a million people that have died in the last 10 years over there. Are the American people even asking any questions about it? Of course not. That's they're going right. to watch American Idol, and they're just going to run back to their addictions. Just as Christ said, a dog returns to his vomit. And this is the problem, is that people don't care. Now, it will not always be like this. There will come a time when they are going to care, when this thing comes around and it bites them in the rear end. But by then, it's going to be too late to do anything about it, if indeed it is not too late now.
Yeah. And in your book, Mark, Hear No Evil, you compare the Jewish agenda to a Christian girl who goes off to college. She goes to a party at a sorority house. She gets drunk, and all of a sudden she gets passed around among all the guys. Tell us a little bit more about this story.
Well, actually what it is, the comparison is that this foolish girl is the Christian world. You know, she spent a lifetime at home with her parents, and her parents hopefully have reared her well and said, look, you have to watch out for this. You know, this is the nature of the beast. Men are like this. You know, when you go away to college, make sure that you maintain your morals and everything else that we have instilled in you. And so she gets out from under her parents. She goes to college. Foolishly, she accepts this invitation to the local frat house, the worst of all, which is the frat house of the Jewish agenda, and she allows herself to be used as a whore. And this is, for the most part, what has happened to the Christian world today. They have allowed themselves to be taken over, to be molested, to be abused, and left nothing by their enemy. You know, Christ said, I send you out as sheep among wolves. Be ye, therefore, as wise as serpents. And what he was saying is, look, you are sheep, and they are wolves. You're never going to be friends with them. You exist for one purpose in their eyes, which is that they want to destroy you. What has happened in the last 100 years in particular is that the Christian West has forgotten about this. The sheep have somehow bought into the lie that has been given to them by the wolves that, hey, we're all the same. You know, we've got four legs, and you know, we both have ears, and we both have eyes, and we both have this cute, fuzzy little tail. Can't we all just get along? But anybody who knows anything knows that these two animals, they can never live in peace. It's like the writer Israel Shamir said. He said, the lion and the lamb, they can live in peace together, provided that you give a lion a fresh lamb every day. Okay? Yeah. And so this imagery that I used in describing the Christian West as this foolish girl, this is basically what has become of us. We are now we're sending our sons and daughters off to die in this war, and it's only beginning. And it's all because of our own doing. We did not listen to the warnings that we were given by the one who knew better than anybody else, which was Jesus.
You talk about the laws of fire in your book. You say that fire needs stoking and fuel from time to time to keep it fed, or it will die out. And we know that Israel is constantly stoking the fires between the Christian and Muslim world. The Jews do that. We know that a tremendous price is being paid by the Islamic world right now, even though the Christian world refuses to hear or see or speak any evil. You say this, the Islamic world has become one giant Auschwitz, one giant politically correct Holocaust. Will you elaborate on that comment?
Yeah, and the thing is this, I know that I'm going to ruffle a few feathers among my Christian friends.
Too late.
But nevertheless, you know, this is something that has to be said. Look, people, you have lost the race, okay? You're not standing up against this beast anymore. The only people who are standing up against this beast, the only people who really understand the nature of the wolf are those in the Middle East, are the Muslims. They are the ones who are saying, look, we don't want Western values in our country. We don't want our young women carrying themselves around like prostitutes. We don't want our young men going into our schools and murdering people en masse. We don't want our unborn children being murdered to the tune of millions a year. And they are the only ones right now, save for a few pockets of Christianity. They are the only ones, the Muslims are the only ones who understand how serious this is. And so, you know, when I use this imagery, you know, whereas the Christian world refuses to hear any evil when it comes to the Jewish agenda, refuses to see any evil, and refuses to speak out against it, the Muslim world, by contrast, does not have that luxury. They don't have the luxury of not hearing any evil. It's with them every moment of every day. They hear the bombs going off in their neighborhoods. They hear the bullets whizzing by them. They hear the cries of agony among their family members because of what they have had to endure over the course of the last 50 years. So they don't have this luxury. And, you know, I'll go a step further, and I know this is probably going to be over the top for a lot of people, but, you know, at the beginning of this conversation, we were talking about how the Jews rejected Jesus' message, and Jesus said, fine, if you're not going to take it, then I'm going to bring it to the Gentiles, who will appreciate it. By the same token, the Christian world today has become what the Jewish world was 2,000 years ago. The Christian world doesn't want to hear anything about Jesus' message. But the one group of people who do appreciate it and who are willing to capitalize on this are those in the Muslim world. Now, what does this mean in the future? My prediction is that we are going to see a miracle take place in some fashion where the Muslim world is going to supplant, meaning it's going to replace, the Christian world. Just as it happened 2,000 years ago, it was the Gentiles who became the headquarters of Christ's message. By the same token, I believe that sometime in the future, it is going to be the Muslim world that is going to do the same.
And you know, Mark, if this does take place, we can't do this interview without mentioning the Christian protectors of this Jewish agenda, meaning those figures of the religious right. We have Jerry Falwell, we have Pat Robertson, we have writers like Tim LaHaye. What is their purpose in this whole thing to protect the Jewish agenda from the many masses that they call their Christian congregation?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you read the warnings that Jesus gave, because he said, you know, you will know who these false prophets are going to be. You know, they will come speaking in my name, but actually they're ravenous wolves. And then, of course, in the book of the Apocalypse, which is talking about, you know, these very days in which we find ourselves now, you see that there are two beasts in that imagery, and one of them is this beast who goes around forcing everyone to worship the first beast. Okay. Now, I believe that this represents Judeo-Christianity as a whole, but in particular, these false prophets who are trying to sell the idea that there is this creature known as Judeo-Christianity, and that the Christians and the Jews have something in common with them, just as the wolves and the sheep do. So what you have are these shepherds, these Christian shepherds who are leading the flock into trying to have this friendship with people who are their enemies. And so I believe that they know exactly what they're doing, by the way. I don't think that we should make any mistake of thinking that that somehow they're mistaken, whatever. They know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look.
Oh, I agree.
You and I and a few other people, we're not well-educated people. We don't have the kind of resources at our fingertips that these people do. And yet, we have managed to educate ourselves on this topic. Now, are we going to entertain the idea that somehow these people with all of their television networks and radio shows flying around the world and all the money and time that they have at their disposal, that they can't figure it out? They know well what they're doing. They're traitors, and they deserve a traitor's end.
Good. Mark, before this show, I was looking up on the Internet the Ten Commandments, and I I looked at the screen, and I'm seeing, like, different versions of the Ten Commandments. One's for the Catholics, one's for the Protestants. And I'm thinking, are God's laws subject to different interpretations? And then I was reading your book, and it seems like there's always some kind of technicality, there's always some kind of exception to God's rules for the Jews. What do the Jews have against God's absolutes?
Well, because, like I said, we have to remember that Judaism is about Judah. It's about what is good for the tribe, what is going to benefit the tribe. And anybody who comes along, the Almighty included, okay, anybody who comes along and who frustrates the tribe's agenda is deemed an enemy. Now, you know, I read an interesting book a few years ago that was written by a well-published writer in Israel. His name is Yossi Klein Halevi. And he wrote this book known as Memoirs of a Jewish Extremist. And one of the things that he wrote in his book is, by giving to us the land of Israel, God had done repentance. Now, keep in mind that word, repentance. God had done repentance. And in his act of goodness, in giving us victory over the Arabs, we forgave him for all the evil that he had done to us.
Oh, my God.
Now, you have to consider. Now, people say, oh, that's just one writer. No, that is the mindset, the Jewish mindset, is that God, any God who would tell them, you cannot do this and you cannot do that, and if you do, I'm going to punish you for it, well, that God is sinning. See, so in giving to them the land of Israel, God had done repentance, and they forgave him for all the evil that they had done, that he had done to them.
You know, Mark, now, it's almost like insanity.
It is. It's absolute madness. And these people are running the world. That's the scary thing. They are the ones driving the bus that we're all in. And this is what I mean about the Christian world and the fact that it's just sitting by. It does not realize how late the hour is. We have madman at the helm of this ship, and they have a madman's agenda. And when they realize that it cannot be brought into existence, what are they going to do? They have their levers on the hands of all of the centers of power in the world. Mm-hmm. They've got at least 400 nuclear weapons at their disposal. What happens when they realize that they can't bring this madman's dream into existence? I don't think it looks very good.
Right, plus all the different, well, I mean, they basically control the foreign policy of this nation, but I want to segue into something that anybody that's read the four Gospels realizes very clearly, that at every single opportunity that Jesus had when he met or confronted with the Jewish religious hierarchy, every single time he ended up bashing them. He would call them a den of vipers. He would call them children of their father, the devil. He would call them whitewashed tombs. So I want to ask you, what, first of all, is Jesus telling us? And secondly, did the Jewish religious hierarchy of that time and of today view Jesus as their mortal enemy?
Yeah, I don't think that we should assume that he was just using flowery language when he was saying this stuff. I mean, he, especially the last week of his life, you know, the last week when he was in Jerusalem, he was warning anybody who would listen. He would say, listen, you see these people over there? If you follow them, if you allow them to get hold of the kind of power that they crave, then you've had it. You're finished, because these people, they cannot be negotiated with. Now, for, you know, almost 2,000 years, the Christian world understood this. And this is why these people were not allowed to get into the driver's seat, so to speak. And they were kind of kept away from having any kind of power. He was not using flowery language, and the evidence of this is obvious today. The Christian world that took 2,000 years to build, it's gone in less than a century.
Yep.
Gone because these people have been allowed to get into the driver's seat and to begin tinkering with the machinery of our society. And so, you know, this is one of the fatal flaws that we have made, is that we forgot. We said, well, let's just let bygones be bygones. You know, the wolves, they haven't attacked us for for a long time, and they seem to have changed their ways. So let's just try to find a way of getting along with them, forgetting that nature cannot be negotiated with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the nature of the predator will always be the same. The nature of prey will always be the same.
Mark, there were practical reasons that Jesus endured the crucifixion, one of them being the visual effect, as you point out in your book, so that people could see the Jewish agenda at work for what it really is in its elements, in its most honest form. And you call Judaism a cultural, religious crime syndicate disposed toward gangsterism and the baggage that comes with it. You compare it to the Crips and the Bloods. Explain that.
Yeah, I mean, look, Jesus, you know, the people who want to spiritualize everything that Jesus did and who try to downplay the practical aspects of what he did, you know, they'll say, well, you know, he died on the cross so that we could all go to heaven. But, you know, he could have died anyway. He could have had a heart attack in the middle of the night and gone to heaven and opened the gates of heaven for us. Why did he pick this manner in such a way so that it would leave a lasting impression upon us, right? He could have died anyway. Instead, he picked the most brutal, violent, and corrupt way of dying that there was. And it was because, you know, in my opinion, what he was saying to us is, pay attention, people. This is what happens when the Jewish agenda worms its way into the politics of a country. Watch the way they're going to bring me up on false charges. They'll grab you in the middle of the night in the same way that the Jewish Bolsheviks did in Russia back during the turn of the century. They will bring you up on false charges. They will bring false witnesses. They will bribe, and then they will threaten the government at that time with riots or whatever if they don't get what they want. And now watch what they're going to do to me,
mm-hmm.
an innocent man, because I got in the way of their agenda.
And Mark, if they're willing to do that to Jesus, the Son of God, they don't care at all what they do to us, right? And so I want to put this in context, and you write about this in your book, that you say during first century Judea, at the time of Jesus, this was the embodiment of the Jewish agenda because they were pretty much free to act among themselves in any way imaginable. So what would the world be like today if it was completely controlled by the Jewish agenda? Now, I'm not convinced that it's completely today ruled by the Jewish agenda, but if it was, what would the world be like today?
Well, we will find out if the Muslim world is defeated or if it crumbles. We will find it, because right now it is the Muslim world alone that is standing in the way of the Jewish agenda being able to take over everything. If they had gotten what they wanted, I mean, think about it at the time. The Roman Empire was the most powerful political, military, and economic entity at that time, okay? And they were well on their way at that time of getting control of it. Look at what happened to the Christians under Nero after he had converted to Judaism. This is where began the Christian persecutions. So had they gotten control of things then, they would have snuffed Christianity out.
Yep.
It was only because of the fact that God in his providence sent the Roman general Titus into Jerusalem in 70 AD and destroyed the temple and scattered the Jews that this gave Christianity the break that it needed in order to survive. Had this not taken place, Christianity probably would have been snuffed out. So we have to take that, you know, on the small scale. Now, when we expand that to the larger scale of what's happening today, what happens when the Jewish agenda is able to finally declare victory over the entire world? Well, people like you and I and anybody else who stands in their way, we don't stand a chance. And this is the amazing thing. You get these apocalyptically minded Christians who are talking about, you know, the tribulation and all the rest of this stuff that's supposed to happen, and they don't realize that they are helping to bring about this tribulation by helping to bring these people to power.
Mm-hmm. Mark, you point out in your book that the Israeli parliament recently passed a bill that makes it illegal for anyone around the world to question the so-called Holocaust legend, and that seems to me like a pretty long arm. I want to know why anyone outside of Israel, which isn't really even their land, why anyone, say, in America, should have to not only recognize or acknowledge Israel, but listen to anything the Israeli parliament has to say and allow them to dictate what we can or cannot question.
Well, once again, I mean, look at what we were told was going to happen.
Are we committing a crime by doing this interview then?
Well, I'm sure that in their mind we are. I mean, you have to remember that a criminal to them is anyone who tells the truth about who they are and what their agenda is. This is why Jesus was a criminal, why St. Stephen, St. Paul, St. Peter, why they were all criminals, because they exposed the truth of who these people were. You know, and one of the things that I tried to point out, you know, you get all of these fundamentalists, the Judeo-Christians, talking about the mark of the beast and how it's coming and it's going to be this and it's going to be that. The mark of the beast is very simple. That mark is the kosher stamp of approval that the Jewish agenda places upon people who accommodate their agenda. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't accommodate their agenda, if you stand up against them and say no, you are exactly what Jesus said you were, which was a brood of vipers, then this is what it means by those who refuse that mark, you know, that they will not be able to buy or sell. You won't be able to function in their world. You won't be able to function in their system mm-hmm. Unless you become their pet.
That's right. Well, Mark, we only have time for about two more questions, so we have to touch upon, I think you mentioned it just very briefly, but for those people listening today that don't know about the Talmud, very briefly, give them an idea of what they say about Gentiles, which is non-Jews, what the Talmud says about Jesus, and what it says about Jesus' mother, Mary.
Well, first of all, you have to remember the Talmud is 6,000 pages in length, but nearly 2,000 of those pages, a third of it, is dedicated to the theme of defaming Jesus, defaming his mother, and in general, painting an abhorrent picture of all non-Jews. Jesus is depicted as a sorcerer. He is the son of an illegitimate sexual union between the prostitute named Miriam and a Roman soldier named Pandera. He was conceived while she was menstruating, which in Jewish religious understanding is considered a state of nida, which is a state of filth. He is presently in hell, that he's boiling in a vat of excrement and semen if he dared to stand up against the rabbis.
Yeah.
And Gentiles in general, meaning anybody who's not part of the tribe, they are there for the purpose of serving the Jews, according to the Talmud.
Yeah.
And therefore, you're free to kill them, to exploit them, to do whatever you want, including raping children under the age of three.
It's all right
to. It works into the agenda.
It's all right to cheat, to lie, to steal, to rape, and also they say that Jesus had sex with a jackass, with a donkey. I mean, this is the lengths mm-hmm. that this very crucial part of Judaism says about them. But before we close out today, I want to let everybody know again, Mark's website can be found at www.crescentandcross.com. He's the author of No Beauty in the Beast, also not my words, but theirs. He's also the author of the just-released book, Hear No Evil, which is a must-read. I mean, it just blew us away when we're very, very honored.
You know what? I stand totally behind everything you say in this book.
Yeah.
Totally behind everything you say.
It's just fantastic.
What I want to ask you is this. How do we get Christians to start asking questions again, since they stopped asking questions, relevant questions, about what's going on so long ago?
And let me add this, too, since it's our last question. And you say that Judaism, they say they're not like us. Be very aware of this fact, that they have an agenda, they despise Christianity, and they want to destroy our way of life because they see Jesus and Christianity as the enemy.
How do we wake them up? Honestly, that I don't know. I don't have even an opinion on it, because at this point, I don't know that they're... Honestly, I think that what it is going to take, it's like being on the Titanic. You can go and you can warn everybody that the ship has been struck and that it's sinking, but they're going to continue to live it up and to enjoy themselves until the water starts to raise and it starts to affect them in a personal way. And I think that this is why Jesus said, look, don't cast your pearls before swine, meaning, you know, there are only going to be a few people who are going to listen to you. And so those are the people we have to reach. These are going to be the seeds upon which we are going to build our new civilization after this disaster has reached its climax.
Well, Mark, I can't even begin to tell you how great this interview was. And that, I mean, first of all, it's the longest interview we've ever done on Wing TV. And secondly, it's every single person in the alternative media and the Patriot Movement and anywhere else in the world should listen to this interview because it's amazing.
And there's Mark standing on the top of a mountain in the bright sunshine.
waiting for my wife to call me to tell me that she's in labor.
I told her
I had to wait until after the interview was over.
Well,
and I think it's kind of symbolic that you're on top of this mountain. So, Mark, I just want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for having not only the brains to come on and say this, but the courage and the guts to say this, because there are so few that are willing to say it. And your book, Hear No Evil, we're just honored to be able to provide it to people.
Very much.
Well, it goes both ways, folks. I couldn't do what I'm doing if you weren't doing what you're doing.
Well, thank you very much. And we want to have our final song today. It's by Mr. Conway Twitty, who's been called a song's best friend, just because he's such a good singer. We want to devote this to Visigoth's wife. The song is called I Can't See Me Without You. It's a very beautiful song.
And we dedicate that to Lady Viz.
To Lady Viz. And we want to thank again Mark Glenn for coming on Wing TV today. Everybody out there, think about what's been said during this show. Think about this Jewish agenda. And after you're done, send this interview along to other people, because this is the way we're going to save our world.
And Mark, best wishes for your wife, Lady Glenn, with her impending labor.
Well, if she doesn't kill me, then I guess everything will be okay, right?
Well, Mark, have a good weekend. Thanks for coming on, and we'll talk soon, okay?
I'll see you.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. We'll be back on Monday with another edition of Wing TV. We're going to hold up the cover of Hear No Evil so everyone can see it. Until then, keep your eyes open, because there's a lot going on.
Have a great weekend, everyone.
I can't see you in my arms anymore.
And I can't see me without you.
Is it day? Is it night? Am I losing my sight? Is it over? Are we really through? I can't see you in my arms anymore.
And I can't see me without you. I can't see me without you to lean on. And I can't see you leaving or gone.
I could never see anything you wanted me to.
And I can't see you to lean on.